Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Spinning the Reel. I am your host, Evan.
And if you're thinking of who to pick to go to a karaoke night, it's your boy, Cody. What's going on, guys?
What does that have to do with it? Anything?
Oh, come on, dude. Hotel California.
Oh, I thought you were going to start singing the Cinderella song. Let's sing it.
No.
It's a million to one. I'm going to be that one. And
you're only proving my point.
Everyone has turned off the podcast now.
Yep. You've only proven my point more. Pick me, guys. It's Cody.
They don't even get to know what we're talking about today because I've scared them all off. What are we talking about today, Cody, for Camila Cabello and James Corden, the only two people
we are not talking to this. Yeah, we are not talking the Amazon Prime release Cinderella.
Its official title is Girl Boss Cinderella, Cody.
I don't recommend it. Anyways, what we are talking about is Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings, Marvel's Phase 4 release. I feel like it's like the first movie of Phase 4. I know Black Widow was released.
I think Black Widow technically is, yeah.
Yeah, but whatever. This is like the real thing. This is we're hit the ground running. This is what I think. So we'll talk about that and obviously Marvel and how much Evan loves it, and then we will talk about other things that we love that aren't necessarily movie related. I think there's a couple TV shows that both of us respectively have been kind of watching, and figured take a little breather from movies, and not the only thing I guess we watch, so we'll talk about a little bit about that, and then we will go into drum roll please, Evan. Can't even hear it. Doesn't matter.
Darn, I tried.
1960s decade project. Let's go, boys and girls. We are starting this week with Evan's pick.
And what a pick it is.
Yeah, what a pick it was.
Cleo from 5 to 7.
I wish I knew more. And yet, at the same time, wish I knew less about this movie going in. And obviously, my thoughts will be shared on the podcast. But this will be a podcast where Cody might get a little...
Cody's going to rant.
I might have to rant on this one. We do not see eye to eye. Let's just put it that way. So, I guess without that, what's today, Evan?
I have to look this up. Is September the 7th.
We hope you all had a podcasting baby. Yeah. Hope you all had a good Labor Day. And here we are back to the
Hell yeah. Labor Day, the best of the holidays because it supports labor.
Yes.
And unions.
Yes.
Good for them. We love you. Yeah.
Love the extra day off, but it's always such a nightmare when you go back. So, and boy, was it a nightmare. Anyways,
Cody, that's not what this podcast is about.
I know.
Let's talk about Shang-Chi.
Let's dive right in.
Throughout my life, the Ten Rings gave our family power. If you want them to be yours one day, you have to show me you are strong enough to carry them.
All right, Cody. Right off the top here, we are talking about what has been quite the revelation for movies in movie theaters. Marvel is back in a big way. Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings. So it's kind of a mouthful, that title, to be honest.
Wow. Yeah.
What did you think of? I didn't even ask you. You almost got away with it.
Oh.
What is Shang-Chi and the Legend of
Can I just tell you my thoughts and we go with that? And
people need to know what it is. How are they going to know otherwise?
All right. It's a Marvel movie, guys. But no, it centers around a gentleman named, well, obviously Shang-Chi, goes by Sean. Really, we just see him as an ordinary kind of guy with his friend, Katie, played by Awkwafina. Actually, how do you pronounce Sean's name? He's played by Simu Liu. There you go, Simu Liu. And anyways, two of them are, you know, best buds, just living life, kind of ordinary, go out for beers at night, obviously karaoke, and valet in the day is their day job. Obviously, that starts to turn awry when Sean's dad kind of gets back in the picture, who is the Mandarin for the Marvel fans out there. Who
technically not.
Okay,
he's not the Mandarin. That is has been abandoned
for the sake of this movie. He is
his name
Mandarin.
Is Wei Wu.
Anyways, he possesses the Ten Rings. He possesses the all inclusive power that comes with the Ten Rings, which is basically immortality. And we learn that Sean is not just an ordinary guy; that he has been trained by his father, who has now lost his loved one, his mother. Both, all of them have obviously lost their mother. And we just see that kind of progress in this father, son, and I guess sister dynamic. Spoilers, sister comes into play. I don't know what to tell you. Action fight.
This is a really bad one.
Yeah, I know. I don't know what to tell you.
All right. Let's just forget about that.
You could have avoided all of it.
We don't need facts. We just need your feelings.
All right, cool. Good. So these are my feelings.
Cool, good.
Yeah, those are some good feelings. I like how genuine it felt, like in terms of like the character development. I felt like Sean was a very relatable character. Like I said, like he just, you know, bars, you know, after work, like goes to the bar after work, like he seems really down to earth for obviously what he's gone through, that we, you know, learn about him throughout the movie, and him kind of just running away as this like assassin, like trained assassin. Like you would never get that, and it's kind of cool. It just comes as a surprise. You know, Awkwafina serves a great role. You know, Marvel's been known to have that comedy in all of their movies now. I feel like she serves as a good focal point for that kind of stuff, where it's like not too much, like as much corny jokes as you could possibly add to a Marvel's movie. I feel like she centers that and kind of delivers at the right time. So when it comes to the humor aspect of what Marvel has come, I felt like with Awkwafina, I love Awkwafina. I think she's made a really good name for herself from a lot of people from The Farewell. Great to have in the Marvel universe. And then the dad, what's his name again? I'm sorry.
Tony Leung, or are you talking about his character's name? Wei Wu?
Yeah, Wei Wu. I like his, like, you talk about relatability. Like, you know, I felt like they have to have like a villain, right? Like there's no villain, but I kind of like that villain aspect where it's not just a nobody villain. I felt like there's attachment to the villain in terms of like, he's a grieving father, you know, he's gone through some shit, losing his wife and stuff, obviously finding his wife and then losing his wife kind of thing. And going from this power grab hungry to enjoying life. And then obviously this power grab hungry and trying to bring her back kind of thing. And I don't know, there's something like relatable about his character that I genuinely really like. And honestly, when it comes to the fight scenes and everything, man, it's probably the best in any Marvel movie that I can honestly think of. I think the Kung Fu is like, all of the fight scenes are relatively just great. I think it's shot very well. There's a purpose and a focus to like every single one of them. Everyone feels warranted, which makes it like really cool. And I just genuinely like with all of that factor, with the fun factor, like it's just a fun time. And surprisingly, like it didn't feel, I don't know if the, you know, 2 year wait just made it feel like fresh and new, or if like genuinely like, and I want to say this is generally like a more fresh take for Marvel that seems to be, you know, panned out very well. And I liked it. And I liked the fact that I was nervous mostly too. I was like, okay, how many characters are they going to throw in from, you know, previous Avengers and all that? Like how much of this is going to be like actual Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings? Like, am I going to get so much Marvel in my face because they're trying to welcome us back to phase four that it's not going to feel like a standalone movie? Luckily to that extent too, it felt like a standalone movie. And to me, you know, I don't know how big Marvel fans would be like, oh, I wanted to see more Marvel, like in terms of like characters. I think it was just enough. And obviously you get the teasers at the end with characters that are still in play in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And that's great because obviously you do want to tease, you want to, you know, promote for what's going to come. But at least for this as well, it felt like its own standalone movie. And I appreciate that as well. So overall, fun, good experience. And I think a good step forward for Marvel for their phase four. So I enjoyed it quite a lot, actually.
Wow. Those are some good thoughts, Cody. I'm impressed. Yeah.
You're right. It's all about feelings. Screw the facts.
I'm going to say this, Cody. It is top tier Marvel.
Hey.
It is right up there towards the among the best of these movies. And part of the reason you hit on a few of the things, but I mean, the biggest thing is just it's staged so well. Yeah. The action feels grounded and realistic in a way. And part of that is because, I mean, they're doing actual practical stunts. I mean, they're like Simu Liu is like flipping around on a bus. And even though that bus is like just parked in front of a big old green screen and he's like swinging around on bars and stuff, but he's still doing it and it rocks. And these people are actually like they went out and they got Tony Leung to play his dad, the villain in this movie. And he's like a big actor in the like Hong Kong scene. And he rocks. Like he's great. They're doing combat to represent intimacy with between these characters, and it's just cool. Like, you're not, it's not like watching Iron Man where, you know, they've got Robert Downey Jr. on a rope and he's just kind of floating around and shooting hand lasers at people. Like, this is much more interesting and fun to watch in those moments. I think that it suffers a little bit as it goes on, as they go from like the real world, from San Francisco, from Macau, from like these real identifiable places to this sort of fantasy, what's the place called? Talo. It loses a little something there when they've got firebirds running around and like dragon horses and stuff like that. It's just a little less relatable. Hell. There's less combat in that, in those parts. The action kind of slows down a little bit.
Did you watch the end of that movie?
Oh, we'll get to that, Cody. Don't you worry. The way I think about it is, I guess going spoilers here as I do, there are a few really like iconic fights in this movie. I think from the very get go, Wei Wu and I don't know what their mom's name is, but when they meet and they're sort of fighting and falling in love at the same time, that's a great fight. The bus fight, awesome, super cool, lots really of fun. Cool. Guy with his name is I think Razor Fist. He's literally got a sword for an arm. It's great. It rocks. And the fight where they're up on the building and they're like swinging around on the scaffolding and fighting up there, that's pretty cool too. And I'd say the only good fight after they get to Talo is when he fights his dad, like hand to hand. And we can talk about the dragons in a minute. Fuck the dragons, but we can get there. The acting's great. Like everyone in it's pretty good. I actually wasn't as keen on Awkwafina in this movie as I think you were.
Wow.
I like Awkwafina generally. I think she is both a great dramatic actor and comedic actor. I think that she doesn't really get to do either of those here. Like, I don't think they give her enough runway to be really funny in the way that she can be. Oddly enough, a lot of that, that role goes to Ben Kingsley, who they brought back from Iron Man 3 because of reasons. He's fine and he delivers some funny lines, but it felt like a lot of Ben Kingsley, to be honest. But again, like all of that too meant that Awkwafina couldn't be the comedic relief that she's so good at. And also they tried to pigeonhole enough comedy into her character that it sort of took away some of the dramatic edge that she has too. So I wanted them to give her a little more more runway. But yeah, great movie. But what's there to say? It's so good. And you want to talk about the dragons? Why were the dragons good, Cody? Please explain to me. I've seen this movie twice now. Are the dragons
twice? Good? Wow, it was top tier if you've seen it twice. I've never known you to watch the opening weekend. Hey, that's true. You probably watched Iron Man 3 times. That's how you figured out there was a rope or whatever. So
amazing.
Whatever. I don't know, man.
Notice that, Cody.
It just kept rolling, right? Like, you know, I was invested. Like I said, the biggest thing with this one is, you know, we talked about the fight scenes and we've talked about the characters, right? Where when you put all them together, it's relatable and it seems rooted in like, it seems in realism. And then it's like, okay, but that's like not the Marvel way. Hold on, I'm getting somewhere. Yep. And then it's like, yeah, like for a lot of people, I get it, like yourself. It's like, okay, I really, and again, I did genuinely like the realism of it all with the Kung Fu fighting, because that is, you know, it is a real form of art and all that kind of stuff. And to that extent, but I feel like you had to go Marvel with it. It is Marvel after all. And I don't know, obviously there is that big, like he's trying to like unlock, like, you know, whatever, like these soul eaters or whatever.
Something dumb.
Then a dragon is supposed to be involved and the dragon is supposed to save the day. Yes, it seems far-fetched just talking about it, but at the same time, it's Marvel. I feel like we've experienced so much with Marvel already, where we've already had unrealistic things in terms of like what you come to expect. So why not throw a dragon in there? And to me, like, it had like a lot of like Avatar, like The Last Airbender kind of like vibes, even Avatar itself kind of vibes, like with the world and stuff, right? Like all of that kind of elements of shows and movies that I've actually come to like really appreciate, like the world building around, like, to me, it's cool to like still throw that in. Like, you have to have something, because otherwise it's like, yeah, you have a grieving father and stuff, and like that's supposed to be your sole focus. And you could have had that, but then again, we already had Snake Eyes, so I don't need Snake Eyes all over again kind of thing. I needed something that made it Marvel And I felt like those were elements that, yes, it's far-fetched. It obviously, as much as I just, you know, gave praise to the realism of characters and the fighting and stuff, that was just, you know, obvious, like really well done. It's just like, I wanted something still that was gonna, you know, what's that appeal? And I felt like that was it. Like, yes, it's far-fetched. I'm not denying it, but it was fun. And it's just like, that is what I come to expect from Marvel. And so I enjoyed it. I don't know what to tell you, man. The dragon is cool, man. Okay. Don't tell me you didn't almost tear up when the dragon got his soul almost sucked out of him. Like,
who would have given a shit?
I would have given a shit. I've been like, yo, that's my dragon.
Look, man, I agree with just about everything you just said. Even the part where you were like, it didn't feel like Marvel up until that point. And you know what? And then you said the dragons are good, and it's not. They're not. They're bad. I think that so much of this movie is grounded in a relationship between a father and a son and sort of this broken family.
Yep.
And that resolves itself beautifully when he finally defeats his dad. And I mean, as far as realism goes, I mean, this motherfucker had rings on his arm that let him live forever. Like, we were always in sort of fantasy land with this stuff. I didn't feel like I needed some big CGI mess of a fight. And we just talked about how, like, the practical martial arts of it all was so cool leading up into it. And then the big culmination is some CGI dragon fighting some CGI, whatever the hell that thing was, Cthulhu, I don't know, in a big puddle where you can barely make out like where these characters are in space, and like the camera's zipping around, you don't know what the fuck's going on. It's messy, it's not interesting to me, and we didn't even learn about the goddamn dragon until like more than halfway through the movie. They're just like, we need some Marvel shit now. And so they close it out with that. But the thing is like, the movie emotionally has already resolved by that point. Like, the dad is dead. Spoilers again. And he's got his rings. Like, they've worked out this conflict between them. And then there's still like 15 minutes of just like the dragon and his little buddy splashing around in the pool. Like, it's not good. It really took me out of the movie. Like, this would have been a 4-star movie for me. I guess that's even spoiled. God, I'm spoiling everything today. This would have been a 4-star movie for me if not for that. Like, there had to be a better way to resolve this movie than having two CGI characters that I was not invested in at all fight each other.
It's hard because it's like, how do you, like, right? As much as you have all these villains throughout like the series, I think Loki being like one of the exceptions. They're just all so forgettable. I couldn't even tell you every villain from every movie.
Are you saying Tony Leung's villain was forgettable?
No. That's what I'm saying. His character is not forgettable. But at the same time, it's like, okay, he's a grieving dad just trying to bring back his dead wife, and he thinks he's doing the right thing and going all power hungry again. It's like, it's not as believable as it is. It's like, if you just left it at that, I feel like
it would be again from me.
But people wouldn't be mad. Exactly. I think you'd have more people unlike you who'd be like, what the heck? Like, that's what I'm supposed to be like. This is my villain. Like, I don't know. Like, at least then, like, you get to see the 10 rings now be used by Sean and stuff. And like, okay, like, now I could see some of the power possesses. Cause obviously you saw Tony Leung use it to some extent and how he grabbed his power and stuff early on and whatnot and the immortality and stuff. And you see it, but it's kind of cool just to see like a big, like, okay. Cause you know, like a big fight's going to happen later on, right? There's a whole Phase 4. There's going to be all their individual movies. And I'm sure there's going to be a big, you know, so it's kind of cool to like, at least get some like, okay, how powerful is this kind of guy in terms of like the MCU? So I don't know, to that extent, it's like, I like to see it used. It wasn't a turnoff. I liked the world building of how, you know, it felt as obscured and non-rooted in the reality of everything. You're right, leading up to that and after the fight with the dad. But it was still cool. Like, I enjoyed that world building and it kept my focus and it kept my attention. Like, it didn't take anything away from me personally, like it obviously did you, which was a 0.5-star. So yeah, I'm sorry your feelings were hurt about a dragon. So
I mean, it's just tough because that is Marvel's always going to do that. Like, Marvel's going to Marvel. They've got to have this big set piece that you can remember coming out of it. And they're always going to push it over the top, keep going further and further. But I mean, I look at something like Black Panther, a movie that we both like. There's a great villain in Killmonger there too. And like, that movie does let itself resolve. I mean, they have a lot of CGI nonsense going on in the background.
Oh, okay. Oh.
it's like a, it's a whole invented world, you know, but at least that, that was a battle between two people who were not 100% heroic and not 100% villainous. And, you know, Killmonger was the villain, but like he was making some good points. So like that, that fight resolves and it's pretty effective, I think. And, but then again, just the fact that I'm comparing it to Black Panther, which I think is the best Marvel movie. We're talking about like a different class than some of these other ones. And I think it comes down to the director of this movie is Destin Daniel Cretton. Of course, director of Just Mercy and Short Term 12, one of my favorite movies. He's great. I mean, like you get real directors to make these movies. And like, of course, Ryan Coogler made Black Panther. Like you get real good directors making these movies. And what do you know? They're actually better than some of these other ones. And we've got The Eternals coming up with Chloe Zhao directing. And from all indications, that movie is supposed to be like something really different from Marvel. So
that'd be cool.
We're going to find out.
Yeah. Well, and obviously too, speaking, I guess alluding to last week, we talked about a little bit how this was going to be an exclusive theatrical release. It seems mm-hmm. like it bode pretty well, actually. I think I don't know how much it made in its opening weekend, but I'm pretty sure it was the most, I forget what the headline read, but it was one of the most successful, like, you know, opening weekend releases for something
during the pandemic, whatever. I think. Yeah.
I don't know, something like that. So, whether it's things well. Getting better.
Yeah, and I'm sure we'll keep doing well. I think part of the problem with like Black Widow was not just that it was just an okay movie.
It was already dated.
Right. But not even just that. It was that it was also available to watch at home. So like anyone that wanted to see it in theaters was seeing it the first weekend and then it had a big drop off. And this movie should be a little more leggy because there's no other way to watch it, you know? And so as people who maybe are a little more concerned about going out to the theater might wait a couple weeks until it's, you know, died down a little bit.
Yeah.
So I think we're going to see some good numbers. Go ahead.
Are you excited moving forward knowing that you've seen this? Cause this is, to me, again, this is like the first movie of Phase 4, like in terms of new content per se. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious with, I know, you know, you just mentioned the director here. You mentioned Chloe Zhao for the director of The Eternals. Seems like the directing obviously probably does have a big factor in how mm-hmm. these movies play out. So, because I know you're excited.
Am I excited for Marvel?
You're at least excited for the next one, which is The Eternals.
I'm excited for anything that Chloe Zhao does. She's, yeah, so. She's the best. But
what's the new Spider-Man trailer?
Fucking Spider-Man.
Yeah, it's Spider-Man, dude.
I feel like people are just going to like lose their minds when like all the Spider-Men show up and then
of course. Oh, did you
it's all so, anyone's talking about. It's just, it's exhausting.
You know, it's funny. Cause I did see this on opening night. I literally got like first showing cause I had already like pre-ordered tickets in advance. I was like, yeah, I'll go to the first showing. So it technically was the first showing at AMC. Like it was like Thursday mm-hmm. at like 6 o'clock. It's just so funny to see the people react when, you know, anybody shows up on screen that's like Marvel related. I mean, there is a lady sitting behind us, Anthony and I, when the movie was over, I was like, that lady almost ruined this movie an entire half star for me. Like that's how like obnoxious it was in a like in a non-fun way. Like it's one thing to be excited, but like I'm not here to diss anybody, but it's like, man, like I just, the people that take this stuff so crazy, you know, like it's I actually nuts. Got to finally like hear it, you know, like I hear her the entire time and she's just going goo goo and gaga over like everything. And it's just like, wow, I'm like, am I missing something? Like, yeah, these are fun movies. Like they're definitely built for theaters and I have a good mm-hmm. time. Like I said, like when it was over, like we looked at each other, like that was cool. Like that was a good movie. That was fun. But to that extent, just like Marvel to me is not that. Like I can agree with you on that. Like, I don't think, I know you have a disdain, not a disdain, but there's a lot of Marvel movies you don't really care for.
If you want,
but I would say like, right. For the majority, I mean, more than 3/4 of the Marvel movies, like I'm completely content with, like, you know, in the time of release and all that kind of stuff. Like I enjoyed watching like them in the
four
moment.
Good Marvel movies.
Yeah, for you. Exactly. So it's just, it is funny to like finally see that perspective. Cause I'd never gone to like, that wasn't technically, I guess it was a premiere kind of thing event, premiere night. It's not like those midnight releases anymore. Cause you can always see it, you know, there's like 8 showings of the day before anyway, now before the Friday release date or whatever. But it is interesting to just see like the, you know, you talk about the whole hammer of it all when, you know, Captain mm-hmm. America had taken it. Like if you had, like, there's all those videos going around and how everyone just went crazy. And it's just like, man, I don't know if I could.
Yeah.
I'm not that crazy about Marvel.
I'm crazy
about dragons.
I watch all these things, so I mean, like, whatever. But you're never going to get me like super excited about Marvel movies because they don't take risks. Like even something like this, which is a departure from what Marvel usually does. And that's not just because it's an all Asian cast or anything. Like a large swath of this movie is in Mandarin. And there's almost nothing more alienating to audiences in the United States than watching subtitled movies. Like it's just something that people, a certain subsection of us moviegoers are fine with it, are into it. It's great. But I feel like the broad movie watching, like the people that are going to see the Marvel movies and basically nothing else, that's like jarring for them. So like the one thing that does give me hope is that Marvel is willing to take some risks, do some things that might alienate a part of the audience. And if they're willing to do that going forward, if they're willing to actually make a movie that takes artistic chances, then maybe there's some way that you can sort of turn these movies, and maybe the Eternals can be that, where you're turning this movie into like a vessel for something that is actually cinematic and more interesting. But I mean, I'll believe it when I see it because it hasn't happened yet. But on the theater note, though, I know this isn't a segment about movie theaters, but I have to tell you what happened at the screening. So I went by myself on Saturday up here by me, and it was like a nearly empty theater. And it was fun, fine, good time at the movie. Went with a friend in Brea down by you, Cody, and we're watching the trailers, right? And the Dear Evan Hansen trailer comes on.
Okay.
Which just is always a disaster when you see Ben Platt acting like he's like 18 when he's clearly 48. Like it's brutal. But this guy in the row, the same row as me, he's just like, well, he's just like, looks good, but it's a little derivative. And I'm just like, what the hell, man? Then the Eternals trailer comes on and he's like, this looks terrible, but I'll probably see it. And I'm just like, what is this guy? That's the stuff I missed about the movie theaters, like the weird interactions and things you overhear.
Yes, as much as you love people, you hear them and you're like, I hate people.
It's a bit derivative, Cody. It's a bit derivative.
I'm going to use that going forward here. But all right, I think it's time. I think it's time, you know, to Letterboxd Roundup. I feel like there was moments where we were butting heads, but we're going to arrive at the same consensus here, Evan. I actually did give this film as much praise as I feel like I maybe talked about it. It sits at 3.5 out of 5. I was also on the edge of 4, but I don't know, just wasn't there for me. I was just like, yeah, it's fun, good time. I appreciate a lot of the kind of stuff that went on, but just 3.5, man.
I was not on the edge of 4. The Soul Eaters swallowed up that half a star, and there was no hope of it ever coming back. But at 3.5 stars, Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings, in my opinion, is still the third best Marvel movie.
As if Evan has a soul to suck out of him.
Yeah, that's why I should have been there. I would have been safe. On a dark desert highway, cool wind in my hair, warm smell of colitas rising. All right, Cody, we are going to take a little break from movie podcasting here and talk a little bit about television, something that we've done once or twice in the past here. Last time, I think we highlighted some of the shows we were watching. We talked about Ted Lasso, which I know we're both still watching.
Season 2, baby.
Season 2. It's great. Love it. But we're just going to recommend something or talk about a TV show or something. I don't know what we're going to do here. You want to go first?
Yeah, I guess off the air, why this segment kind of came up is, one, I failed, guys. I didn't have a game ready. I was just another one of those weeks. I don't want to always have excuses, but just nothing came to me and just too busy. And I couldn't think of anything during the course of the extra day off, I guess, either. I was too busy. Regardless, that's not the point. But we were talking off the air and it's just like, it was kind of funny because it's like, I do watch TV off the side. I don't watch too much TV. But when it comes to...
Yeah, Cody, read a book or something.
I am reading a book right now.
So am I. You want to make this a book review segment?
No, I don't. That could be another segment for later. We need to save that in our back pocket. We've already
got to have plenty of ideas.
We have plenty of ideas. We'll talk about our books maybe next week. But this is about TV. And it's just funny because it's just like there's been short series on Netflix or limited series on Netflix. And I don't know. I feel they seem to promote more of like TV series. And I always feel like more like, oh, cool, I can't wait for like a season two compared to obviously Kissing Booth 2 or 3. Like I'm not there for those movies. Like I don't need a second or third movie. No, I'm not. Okay, I'm there for them, but it's like not there for them. I don't know. So it's just like I feel like it's just funny that you get so much promotion and I feel like so much more like energy from a lot of people and willingness to go potentially see series compared to necessarily just, you know, random movies that drop on your Netflix homepage or whatever. So with that being said, one of the series that caught my eye that had been on my radar that just released, I believe, last week, if I'm not mistaken, last Tuesday, technically. So another episode drops tonight. It's on Hulu, and it is called Only Murders in the Building. It stars, surprisingly, it's kind of a weird cast, I guess you would say, for thinking they'd ever do something together. But Selena Gomez, Steve Martin, and Martin Short.
What are you talking about? Steve Martin and Martin Short do everything together.
They do everything together. Selena Gomez is that, you know, where she fit into the mold. Anyways, everywhere. They live in this.
Selena Gomez fits in wherever she wants to be. We love Selena Gomez on this podcast.
She's cool as shit. She's cool as shit. Anyways, so it's just like a murder mystery, but it's like it's a comedy murder mystery. They live in this apartment building. They all listen to the same podcast and they realize that when they're out to dinner, because essentially there was a legit murder in the building that forced them to basically all meet at, you know, the restaurant across the street. And then they sneak back in because they're all into this mystery and all that kind of stuff. And they're, now they're here trying to solve this murder and starting their own podcast, and they all have their own, you know, ordeals and problems that they themselves are personally dealing with. That's kind of cool. And it kind of keeps you guessing. But at the end of it all, you know, like you said, with Steve Martin and Martin Short, if you think it's anything serious, it's complete just banter on, you know, on crime, you know, on those kind of crime shows and stuff. So I personally like a lot of crime shows. I don't watch too many, but all the time my parents are always watching them. So if I'm eating dinner or something, it's on, it's like, you know, I'll watch it. It's cool, whatever. But this is like a really good comedy. Like it's just actually like genuinely like really, I think it just hits on like all cylinders to like enjoy it. You know, we talked about that, like Ted Lasso, like I feel there's that vibe there for what it is and I'm just there for it. So I enjoy the hell out of it so far. There's been like, three episodes with the fourth one dropping tonight. And all I can say is I recommend watching it. Only Murders in the Building, guys, on Netflix. I mean, Hulu, I'm sorry.
All right. Well, I'm looking forward to watching it. I've heard good things. So mm-hmm. That's exciting, man. So much, so many things I could get into here. So
you gotta pick just one.
I know. Let me tell you a little story.
You have so many stories.
Tale here. So yeah. I had been guest of the show, Zach, who we now talk about basically every week. It seems like he's the new Lady Bird on the podcast.
Yeah, dude, Zach, look at you, dude.
He kept bugging me to watch The Big Short. I don't know if you've seen The Big Short. Adam McKay's movie about the housing crisis. I didn't like it, but that's not what we're talking about. To watch that, I downloaded this app called Pluto TV, and Pluto TV is like basically like streaming television. They run things in like blocks, like regular television. They have commercials, but you can also watch stuff on demand. And so they have a terrible selection of reality TV shows that after we finished watching the Big Short, my roommate Evan, he put on 3 shows in a row that made me literally lose my mind. I was not happy about this.
Worse than He's All That.
Repo Wars, which is a bunch of repo people telling stories about times they repossessed poor people's things and then reenacting them. Very bad. Dogs with Jobs, which is exactly what it sounds like.
It's what it sounds like. What it reads. And My Cat from Hell,
which is basically The Dog Whisperer.
Are you recommending these? Or
I'm saying stay away from Pluto TV and those shows on Pluto TV. What you should watch is on Netflix. It's season 2 of I Think You Should Leave. Don't know if we've talked about this on the podcast before, but this show is just a fucking stroke of genius. It's back. Tim Robinson's back. The show is wild as ever.
Guys.
Corncob TV, Coffin Flop. You tell me you didn't laugh at the Coffin Flop sketch?
I'm telling you. Okay. So for some context, I don't know where this show originated from, because season one was on Netflix, a year ago? Anyways, I was over at Evan's house, and he's like, you need to watch this. He just plays it. I forget what we were doing, but like all of season one plays, because they're really like 20-minute episodes. And I'm just like, what am I watching? Like, this is Evan's comedy. There are a couple funny moments, but I was just like, this is so stupid. Like, what the fuck am I watching? And you ate it up, Evan. And then apparently a lot of people ate it up, because when you texted me that there is a season two coming out, I was like, wait, I thought this was one and done. What the fuck?
It's one of those shows that just if it's on, like, if you're on that wavelength and you're just into the comedy that they're doing, it's just mesmerizing. It's so funny.
What'd you compare it to? Like SNL, I guess, maybe.
It's SNL, but better. I mean, it's like SNL, it's but better. Wilder. It's cringier. Like, it's, they don't, I don't know. I feel like SNL, you're watching it and it feels like they've gone through like 14 drafts to get to like the version of it that's least offensive to anybody. And this show is just like, look at all these shitty people doing shitty things, and it's hilarious. And like, there's just, season two is full of just treasures. All like through and through. There's the one where he goes to the ghost tour, and it's the adult tour, so they can swear. Oh man, I can't recommend the show enough. It's one of those things where these sketches just get stuck in your head, and then all of a sudden you'll be talking to somebody and they'll say something that reminds you something for the show, and it just, all you can think about is that sketch and like the insane line delivery. It's brilliant.
It's a little derivative, Evan.
Oh god damn it. I think you should leave season two on Netflix.
I think we should both just leave. I think this is where we should cut the podcast off. But that wouldn't be the case, because what we've really been excited for, what we really want to talk about, is the 1960s decade project. So if you're ready, let's go swing into that one, Evan.
Wow, what a transition.
Pretty woman walking down the street, pretty woman, the kind I like to meet, pretty woman. I don't believe you, you're not the truth. No one could look as good as you.
All right, Cody, that is right. It's time at last for another decades project. We haven't done one of these since the 1950s, or at least it feels like it. we are here to talk about the 1960s, the swinging 60s, Cody. And first up, as is tradition, my pick for a film. So let me get into this. I'm still going to make you describe the plot of this movie.
The plot's easy. The plot of this movie is easy.
So I did something that we haven't done for this series before, I don't think. I picked a movie as my movie that I'd seen before, because I think it's really great. I think it's really impactful for cinema. I just really like it. And then also, I kind of knew Cody wasn't going to like it. I guess we'll see if I was right. Wink, wink. But I thought it might lead to an interesting discussion as well. So my pick, Cleo from 5 to 7, is probably Agnes Varda's most famous film, most notable. She is one of the, of course, most notable directors of the French New Wave, Cinema Verite. She rocks. I think she passed away a couple years ago, which is very sad. But yeah, Agnes Varda, Cleo from 5 to 7. Cody, what is Cleo from 5 to 7?
It's about Cleo's life from 5 o'clock to 7 o'clock.
Actually, from 5 o'clock to 6:30, which is, I guess that didn't fit on a poster as well.
It's about a young, you know, it's in Paris. It's about a young singer, very charming to the eye, to obviously everybody, beautiful woman, whatever. And we find out early on that she has cancer, and she is awaiting results from the doctor. And she goes and does basically just all these mundane tasks, and just goes through the city of Paris doing these mundane things, and just living her life. And that's all we see. It's just an hour and a half window, like Evan just said.
It all happens in real time.
Of just her going, you know, to the store to buy a hat, or
hell yeah,
and then her not looking good in that hat. Apparently, she doesn't like the way she looks in that hat.
She looked in the hat,
and then meeting her friend who, you know, breaks a mirror, and that's a bad omen because she had a reading early on from psyche yeah. that, you know, hey, you might die. I'm not saying you're going to die. And then, you know, she's like, oh, okay.
She's going to fucking die.
And yeah. And then she whispers later. Yeah, that girl's fucked. And then, you know, I don't know. It's just crazy, man. And then she meets a guy that's going off to war. And because she meets this guy going off to war, she sees life as a whole new way.
That's not what that was. No, that is such a misunderstanding why this movie works.
She meets a guy.
Let me help you out here.
Hold on. Simple. No. She meets a guy, and then you know all this stuff leading up to meeting this guy. Can I finish? It's absurd. It's absurd, Evan, that she's died from cancer. All she cares about is her looks, her voice, all this kind of jazz. Then she meets this guy, and in a matter of 30 minutes of her going, or of him going, hey, you know what? It's going to be okay. I'm going to take you to the doctors, and then you're going to take me to the train station or whatever and see me on my way. And then by the end, she gets told that she's going to die, basically. Oh, hey, it's just 2 months of chemotherapy. You'll be fine. And she's like, oh, okay, I'm cool about it. The whole movie's dumb.
Here's how you do a plot description. This movie, it's a woman is awaiting a cancer diagnosis.
Yeah. I had to talk about everything.
It's an hour and a half of her life as she's awaiting this diagnosis. That is what this movie is.
So you're telling me two things. You're telling me from literally there's a title page that says Cleo Day 507. So it's only an hour and a half. And I'm pretty sure by the end of the movie, her real name's not even Cleo either. So what the fuck am I watching? It's all fake advertising. All right,
I'm going to let you rant. You rant. Go ahead. Tell me why this movie. Go ahead. Do it.
I ranted.
You ranted right through the plot description.
I just kept going with it. I don't know what to tell you, dude. This movie. Okay,
why didn't you like it? What was wrong with it?
It's boring. It's boring as fuck. I don't know what else to tell you. Like, I'm watching this movie. What? I didn't even know it was a fucking French movie. So, like, I'm like, ah, shit, subtitles. Not always my favorite thing, you know? I was in a mood yesterday. So, I'm like, fuck, I have to read this shit so I understand what's going on. And then I realized I probably didn't have to read anything to understand what's going on.
Mood.
It's just, she just gets in a taxi. You know what? I'll kudos this. The amount of shit she does in an hour and a half is quite impressive. I feel like that's a whole day for me. And yet she does it in an hour and a half. I don't know what. She meets at a coffee shop with not her maid, but.
It's like her, probably her assistant, personal assistant kind of thing.
And then she's just like, oh, I'm dying. And then it's like, okay. And then the guy's like, what's wrong? And then she's like, I'm dying. And he's like, oh, tough bite. Coffee's free. It's free. Get out of here.
Let me tell you, no fucking French bistro owner would give away coffee for free. I've been to Paris. That doesn't happen.
So you see, you are admitting there's problems.
I've been to Paris in the 1960s, Cody. Maybe they were nicer then.
And then she like just walks out and then she goes shopping and stuff like for this hat. And she's like, do I look good in this hat? Do I want this hat? And then she gets the hat and then she's like not happy with the hat. And I don't know, dude. Like, I don't know what transpires in this movie. Like, it's like, okay, I appreciate like the mundane, like, okay, this is what life would be like. Like the way it's shot, I admit it's pretty cool. Like, I like how they do get in the taxi and like the taxi like takes them. And like, you are along for this journey and ride. Like, I can understand like that if you're really into this stuff and like that hypnosis factor of it, I guess, at all, of the way it's shot. I understand that, whatever. I don't know, dude, but just with the way it opens, and I'm glad, as much as I just gave this movie shit, I'm kind of glad the way it ended too. Cause I'm like, man, if they would have built up this whole hour and a half, whatever. And that's like, I don't know. I don't know how else I would have wanted it to end, but I guess I feel happy the way it ended for what it was. Cause I already had to sit through an hour and a half of that misery. So I was just like, oh, okay, cool. Like, she came to an understanding of like life's more than just, you know, having cancer kind of thing. I don't know what to tell you about this movie because there's nothing that goes on in this movie to tell you guys about. My plot description is the hour and a half of her doing absolutely nothing. And I don't know what to say. I don't even know how to rate this movie. All I left was a fucking plot description or not a plot description, but a review. And I couldn't even rate this movie. Like, I'm just going to flat out tell you guys, I don't even know what to rate this movie.
Well, you're going to have to come up with something because we do a roundup for the for these things. Let me tell you why this movie is significant before I tell you why it's great.
Oh, okay.
That's... So And first and foremost, so like the French New Wave, you talked about some of these tracking shots with like the taxi and a lot of the way, like the way the camera moves in the hat store, when she, it kind of circles around her and sort of breaks this traditional plane of just like looking side to side. These are all developments of like the French New Wave. Those were things that didn't happen in movies before that. Like this is all,
and they shouldn't happen in movies now.
Well, just the cinematic techniques, some of the editing styles, not necessarily just Cleo from 5 to 7. Jean-Luc Godard, who is actually the guy in the short film, is another prominent New Wave director that established a lot of these things too. It's also really significant because Agnès Varda was one of the earliest female directors to really be widespread and popular. You didn't see a lot of female directed films before her, and she kind of revolutionized feminist cinema. So like significant in both of those ways, but like this movie is also just really fucking good. I mean, the thing about it is, so I don't even know how to describe it. So one of the things I really
I want to make sure we watch the same movie. Can you tell me one more time what the title of this movie was?
Cleo from 5 to 7.
And it was released when?
1962.
And you watched it on HBO Max?
That's right.
Okay, we did watch the same movie.
Just fantastic. So
I just want to make sure.
One of the cool things, the film within the film, like this was also a New Wave innovation as well. So that film within a film with, again, Jean-Luc Godard and Anna Karenina, I think is her name, who's kind of like, and it doesn't matter. We can get into that at a different time.
We're going to get into it now.
That short film, which is essentially about a guy who's seeing the worst of the world, like who is seeing death and sickness and misery all around him, realizes that it's his sunglasses. He takes them off and he's like, I've been seeing things through these lenses that made everything dark. And he starts to see the world through a brighter lens. And that's really what Cleo from 5 to 7 is about. That film within a film encapsulates this whole movie. So Cleo is self-obsessed and she's constantly looking in mirrors and talking about how beautiful she is and how that's her value and all of these things. And this cancer diagnosis that she's so worried about, it colors everything that happens throughout this day. So it makes the mundane significant. When she is overhearing a couple break up in the cafe early in the film, it's the focus is on them. She's finally paying attention to someone other than herself because she's starting to understand that there's like a broader world around her, and only a clash with death can bring her that perspective. As the movie goes on and she does all these other things, right? There are fewer and fewer mirrors that appear. She's not looking at herself constantly. She's actually engaging with her friend who is the model, and she's engaging with this man who she meets in the park, who honestly kind of creepy, just kind of like stalking her in the park. And then they go on like a little adventure, like, you know, they have an interesting like conversation, and she sort of finds the value in someone else as well. And like all of these things that, like you said, it is very mundane. It's almost absurdist and just like, this is just nonsense happening throughout the day, but it all takes on so much meaning because we know that she's awaiting this like life altering news, and it becomes, and you can see it on her face. You can see it just on the faces of everybody that she passes by. And they're like, she's dealing with this great traumatic thing, this possible death sentence. She's afraid she could be dying. And yet, as she goes through her day, there's people catcalling her from like the next car over. And there's people who are having their own, like even the doctor at the end, when she finally does see the doctor, he's just like, oh yeah, whatever. And that was just like a minute in his day. And we've just lived with Cleo, and he's had his own experiences, and it rules, man. It's just such a profound viewing experience, in my opinion.
You know who else is dying?
Who's dying, Cody? You've been building up to this.
Me right now, hearing that explanation of why you love this movie so much. I'm dying because you loved it so much.
It's just life.
You know who's also dying? Is the guy also? Do we not care about the guy who ate like 3 frogs? Like, that's a problem to me.
Yeah, why did he do that? That was weird.
She's watching this guy and he just eats like 3 frogs like right in front of her.
Or the guy that's stabbing a thing through his arm, like piercing his arm. Like it's just that kind of stuff though. Like going through the day, just the absurdity of just everyday life.
It's
just think about.
Here's my problem. It's not the mundane. I've enjoyed movies that nothing really happens. Not a lot, but I have enjoyed them. it's just one of those ones that, I don't know, maybe it's because it's, and maybe this is a good thing that we're talking about it, like bringing back the 1960s and stuff. I just felt so disconnected, obviously, because it's not so modern and stuff. Obviously, I don't really know that much about, you know, what we've alluded to with the, you know, the new French era and all that kind of stuff at the time. So that plays a factor. But when you have to think so heavily, as much as I enjoy the movies where you have to think, I felt like this one in particular, I'm just like, I'm having to think too much about what this all means. I kind of like that you talk about the mirrors. I didn't really think about that. And I guess maybe I really should have, because maybe that would have gave a way different perspective. But I didn't even pick up on that is what I'm saying. Like watching this until you actually talked about it, I'm like, oh, you know what? You are right. Because the mirror breaks with the friend and then she thinks, oh, it's a bad omen. And I think there's
again,
a guy
even here. That she's putting meaning into everything, right? She's putting meaning into the broken mirror. She's putting meaning into the guy that died at the store and like all of these things,
but it's just,
and like wearing a new hat on a Tuesday, like all these things that they're placing this meaning into.
The only thing you should be doing on a Tuesday is having a taco and a cold beer. Okay.
Recording a podcast.
Recording a podcast. I don't know, man. I don't know what to say.
Let's talk a little bit about the text you sent me yesterday. You were in it. You were in it for a minute. You were like, what did you say? You said, I don't understand why you care about this rich lady's problems.
Oh, yes.
And I was like, dude, her problem is cancer. What do you mean? How do I care about that?
Usually you're not keen on the rich white people aspect of any movie where it's just like, no, I don't want to hear this.
But she's dying.
Yes. So
get better. And that's the thing too, like the ending, I really think the ending's pretty impactful too, because it's like after that whole experience that she's gone through, you know, her life is changed either way. Like they don't say whether she gets better or not. I mean, the doctor seems hopeful, but again, like he spent 2 seconds there, like whether the doctor's right or wrong, like it doesn't really matter ultimately for like the effect the movie's had. Her perspective on the world has already changed. And it's just come to that point, like
it's
just
crazy.
It rocks, dude.
She's like feared for her life. She meets a random stalker guy at the park, and then this random stalker guy talks to her, and within a matter of not even an hour and a half, what, 30 minutes of
yeah, they're together on screen for like 20 minutes maybe.
Hey, I'm not afraid anymore. Like, what? I'd be afraid.
Yeah, but it's not that she's not afraid because she met some weirdo in the park and he didn't murder her. It's that like she's lived through this day and seen the world in a different light now. And like for once in her life, she's lived, she's given herself to something other than herself. And now she's ready to face it head on. And it's good, man.
No.
What are you talking about?
You know, I told you from the beginning, if you put a title on a movie and I can't even trust the title because one, that's not her name. And that's not the runtime of the entire movie I get because I'm shorted 30 minutes. Okay. This movie needed to be 30 minutes longer or the title.
I just noticed that watching it the first time.
Title needs to be
like, this is not from 5 to 7. This is only 6:30.
Because the doctor had to be there early and get on with his day, and he spent 2 minutes with her. Mm-hmm. I don't know what to tell you, dude. I just like, wow, she doesn't look good in the hat, or wow, she hates her voice. And
she does look good in the hat. She looks good in all the hats. That's what she says. Everything suits her.
I don't know what to tell you, man. I don't know what to tell you. This movie was not for me. I wish I would have even read the plot description before I watched it. I was just like, okay, Evan picked a movie, and I went right into watching it, guys. And let me tell you again.
Were you just like waiting for something to happen the whole time?
Oh, hell yeah. I was waiting for something to happen. I was confused in the first 5 minutes. I'm like, wait, like, what's this for? Am I watching? Like, is this it? Cause it started like the fortune thing and yep. It kind of like didn't
in color.
Feel,
and then,
yeah, I was like in color. I'm like, wait, is this like a recording over something that's like messed up right now? Anyways, and
yeah,
then, like,
it's an old movie that hasn't been restored, so I think
I'll tell you what I got to the point where I watched her get her coffee, I watched her get back in the taxi and get back to her place, and it was at that moment where I realized nothing was gonna happen, and I was like, fuck you, Evan, in my head. I was just like, I knew the minute she got back to her place, I'm like, this is going to be one of those movies where she just had this fucking revelation from just going about her fucking daily life.
You saw my review. I watched it before you did. And I'd seen it before, but I logged this review before Cody even started watching it, I think. And all I said was, it's going to be an interesting conversation on the podcast.
It sure as hell is, because I don't know what to say about this, man. I just don't. And it's funny because the biggest movie I compare it to where I feel like nothing happens that I've seen as of like that I want to relate to is kind of like Inside Llewyn Davis. I feel like
I love that movie too.
I know more seems to happen in that, but it's another one of those movies. If I had to like pick like a more modernized movie that I've seen that I would help you guys try and maybe relate it to, from my standpoint, is Inside Llewyn Davis. And then that movie comes full circle too, and you're just like, wait, what the fuck even happened here too? And I enjoyed it more. I actually did rate that one a lot. I did rate that one. I think I rated it pretty high because I'm like, you know, I get it. And I think that was just it. I think, you know, this movie is just, it's from an older era that unfortunately I wasn't, you know, I haven't been culturally like invested in or I guess researched or like knew about to where I could appreciate the values that came out of this movie. Where if I had known all this stuff in advance, you know, maybe there would be more appreciation for it. But the fact that absolutely nothing happens in this movie and I'm supposed to be like, okay, she had an epiphany in this hour and a half.
It's just mesmerizing, you know, man.
It's not mesmerizing. I'm reading a screen and I'm just watching her go about her daily life. And you know what? I have plenty of, I can go people watch at a fucking park.
It's so authentic. And
maybe I will meet the next Cleo and save a life. So. You know, there's that.
Maybe if you stalk women at the park, that would be the wrong lesson to take away from this movie. God, that guy he's creepy. Anyway, let's round it up, Cody.
All right, Letterbox roundup.
You got to give it something. You got to commit right here.
Why do I have to commit? Why can't I just
have to do it?
I can't rate this movie.
The people are waiting. If you hated it, that's fine. People hate movies. You don't like cinema. It's fine.
Two and a half.
Oof. Oh man.
You made me rate it. I hated this movie.
Cody, this movie has just for the audience's reference, like on Letterboxd, the average rating for this movie is 4.2 out of 5. It's like one of the highest rated movies of all time.
Yeah, and it's about a bunch of people who understand movies. And let me tell you, from anyone who just wants to enjoy a movie, this is not it. It's not it.
It's a 5-star movie, man.
Go watch Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings. I promise you, if you're just an average moviegoer, 11 out of 10 times, you will enjoy that movie more than this, whatever the fuck this was.
It's wonderful. Cleo from 5 to 7. It's on HBO Max if you have not seen it and would like to. What are we watching next week though, Cody?
It is my pick. It is something that has actually been wanting to watch and I never got around to it because I don't know why it's come up in like multiple conversations. You know why I came up in multiple conversations is do you know The Church?
Because the movie's The Graduate movie podcast.
The movie's called The Graduate. And it stars who's it star? What's his name? Dustin Hoffman is like the main actor in this that anyone would probably know. It's funny because it came up and I don't know why it's come up in more conversations, but at work, when I worked in Laverne and stuff, that church, we drove by that church and like someone had like pointed it out and I was like, oh, I didn't know that. And like showed me like the scene like on YouTube of that church. So there's like that historic, like, I don't know if you know that. Did you know that? Cause you live right there too, or you did growing up.
I don't even know what church you're talking about.
Well, when you watch the movie, there's a church, I believe at the very end of the movie, not to spoil the movie. And that church, I guess, is
looking at Letterboxd, Rob or Cody, and it's looking like people like this movie. So
hey,
I'm looking.
You know what? But people like
it. You're probably gonna hate it. So
people like Cleo from 5 to 7. What can I say? All right, I might change it. Still 2.5. Maybe I'll sit at 3 because I couldn't even rate it.
You don't have to. You know, don't cave to the wishes of other people, Cody. Live your life from 5 to 7.
Well. That's in 2 minutes. It's over. So my life from 5 to 7 was driving home to then record this podcast. See what, that's what I'm saying. She got really far in her life in an hour and a half. I wish I could have that epiphany. So anyways, yes.
The graduate next week.
And we will go from there for our decades project, guys. We will have a vote next week. Actually, I think we're going to,
we'll announce that next week. I think
we will. we'll talk about it in the close here. So.
All right, Cody, that does it for another episode of Spinning the Reel. Housekeeping notes here. I have yet to write anything this week. It was a busy weekend. I intend to still write a review of Shang-Chi and of Cleo from 5 to 7.
Two reviews.
Hopefully I'll have those both up by Thursday. That's the goal. So keep an eye on our website, spinningthereel.com, for that, as well as links to all our socials. That's kind of where you can find us. What else should people know, Cody?
That you actually might need to download Pluto after all because of our movie pick, my movie pick.
Fuck. it's still on HBO Max.
Oh, is it? Yeah. The Apartment?
Spoilers. Oh, The Apartment. The Apartment is on Canopy, is I think where I watched that.
Mm. So, anyways, we're going to have a vote next week between three movies. We wanted to make sure that they were movies, one, that weren't only significant to the 1960s, but we felt it was only appropriate, too, that they were
on Prime
easily.
Video.
I just wanted to make sure they were easily available. So Prime Video is good. So The Apartment would still be a good choice. So we're just going to have
Lolita's available anywhere.
So we're going to have just one vote after next week's pod. My pick will be The Apartment. Evan, I think, has a movie, and then we'll collectively pick a third one. What was your movie pick?
My pick was Lolita. So okay. I'm going to actually campaign for The Apartment. So we'll see.
That was my pick then first.
We should say to our guest for this, we have finally secured a guest, and returning to the show will be Lemma, whose pick we don't have yet, but we will let you know when we do. And
when did Zach's name change?
I know, right? Wild. He was almost going to be the guest.
Yeah, but you got booted because we talk about you like Lady Bird on this podcast.
That he got booted listening to this close if he makes it this far.
Well, you're lucky because, like you said in the intro, only people made it about 10 seconds. So we're really just
ranting. If anyone's still listening, I'm shocked.
Yeah. If you are still listening, like always, you're probably waiting for that, bye to end the podcast. So bye.